The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome to another edition of HR Today Radio, the Delaware Valley's leading human resource radio show specializing in and talking about local issues surrounding the Delaware Valley. As always, we're sponsored by Sharon Planning, Challenger Gray and Christmas, and the Dubin Group. And I'm your host, Kenny Dubin, and today we're fortunate enough to be with Frank D. Bernardino, who is the managing principal of Vienna Capital Advisors. Frank, welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Great to be here, Kenny.
Frank, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got your background in human resources and how it got to where you are today?
I've been in HR consulting for about 35 years. Started as an underwriter. And moved into consulting back in the mid-1970s. Worked mostly doing benefit consulting work and some comp work, and then formed Vienna Human Capital Advisors about 10 years ago after having spent about 28 or 29 years with Mercer.
Mercer Consulting?
Yeah, Mercer Consulting.
I've heard of them.
Yeah.
A little bit of a big company. You've been with Vienna, or started Vienna Human Capital Advisors. Tell us what is the thrust of that organization and what are you trying to accomplish?
Vienna is an HR consultancy that specializes in human capital analytics. We help companies analyze the money that they spend on human capital to maximize both the productivity and the ROI of that human capital investment, and use it to drive the human capital strategy of the business to further the overall business performance of the organization.
So in layman's terms, you take cash and invest in a factory. You want to know what the ROI is, or return on investment. And your slant is, let's look at what we're spending on human capital and what the actual return is in dollars and cents or percentage of revenue, what have you.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's no different than any other investment that a company makes in terms of understanding what kind of return we're getting on that investment. And what we've been able to do is develop a formula, and a couple of different formulas, but one of them is an ROI formula that isolates the total investment in human capital, which we define as employee cost, cost in support of employees, and cost in lieu of employees, and then measure how much profit that is driving on a after financial capital cost.
That reminds me of a book that I'm reading called Optimize Human Capital Investment. Have you heard of it?
Yes. In fact, it's a book that I published late last year, it's going well. And
I know one copy has been given out to me, so I know at least the publication is numbering one.
Yeah. It was really designed to help CHROs make a strong business case for the investments that they want to make in the human capital strategy to drive business performance. One of the big challenges HR has faced historically is the ability to make a compelling financial business case, what they call a hard business case, for the money the company spend on employees, or what we refer to as human capital. And what we've done is through this process, and we lay it out all through the book in terms of how to measure it and then how to convert it into strategy and then ultimately measure the impact on shareholder value, so that a CHRO can walk into a CEO and demonstrate that through the investments that they believe are necessary, this is what the financial outcome will be in a compelling and convincing manner. The formulas that we've developed, the methodologies or approaches that we've developed, were developed in collaboration with Wharton MBAs, GE Pedigree CFOs, investment bankers, private equity executives. So it's passed their test, because as any person in the HR space knows, that if they want a company to invest in something with the human capital strategy, and they're trying to make a business case for that, finance has to review the numbers, because no CFO is going to go to a board or make a financial decision without finance signing off on the numbers. So that's why it was important in what we've developed that it be vetted with, developed in collaboration with, field tested with rock solid financial people that signed off on the approaches that we've developed.
So I guess let's take a step back. you have a formula that you're using, that you have developed with schematics involved, numbers that have been proven. If we go back to kindergarten in my world, you have the argument, well, who's to say that the numbers you're using and the basis you're using are accepted with respect to every company can use it, and it can be a value to whether you're producing widgets, whether you're making airplanes, whether you own a radio station. How do you make it so it's accepted? What are the elements involved? And furthermore, is it something that any company can use no matter what industry they're in?
What we've developed are formulas that can be used in the private sector as compared to the public sector. They can be used both in for-profit organizations as well as not-for-profit organizations. In any organization where margin is critical to the business, just as every business has a finance function.
Sure.
Every business has a people function.
Mm-hmm.
What we've strived to do is give HR a solid financial tool that they can use to guide them in the development and execution of the human capital strategy or the HR strategy for that business in a manner that the finance people find acceptable. And all the numbers that we use in the formulas come out of the general ledger. So these are the numbers that are audited within the organization. You don't have delays in terms of the data. The numbers are solid.
So your formulas and your, I guess, assessments can be updated monthly. As soon as the financials are done at the end of the month and closed out, you can plug the new numbers into your formulas and you get an accurate ROI on the human capital like that.
Yes. In fact, we're working with a Fortune 100 company and the CHRO, and we're doing a pilot with them. The CHRO is quite intrigued with the approach. And on December 17th, he asked us to update the numbers for 2012. And on January 8th, they gave us the data. And it just needed to be scrubbed a little bit. But within a week after that, we were able to produce the ROI and productivity numbers. So it's just unheard of.
So for the people that might not understand this completely, if you look at a company and look on the return on investment on technology,
right,
and you can say, all right, well, we got a 16% return on investment on this. We put $1 million into it, and we're spinning off $160,000 of profit right on it. We know that number is 16%.
Right.
It's hard. It's in the financials. It's been audited, as you said. It's been approved. It's in our financials that we put out to the public because we're publishing. You can do the exact same thing with human capital.
Precisely. In fact, we take it one step higher in that we use what it's called a value-added formula so that we already account for financial capital cost. Think of it this way, Kenny. If you were to borrow $1 million...
Well, then whatever bank does that better get audited because that money's never coming back to them. But go ahead.
And at the end of that year, you have to pay the bank back $1 million plus interest, let's say is $100,000.
Okay.
And you've earned the $160,000 that you talked about. What's your net income?
$60,000.
That's what's known as a values-based formula. So that's what we've created as well with the formula that we've developed. So this is any CFO worth their salt is familiar with value-based formulas, and it just strengthens that much more the credibility and the influence of a CHRO when they're making a business case for the investments that they believe are necessary to drive higher levels of organizational performance.
Can you pin it down to incremental increases in investment in employees? For instance, we have a base of 10,000 employees. If it's a Fortune 100 company, whoever it is, they probably have 10,000 or more. And we say, all right, each employee is worth X to us because you're not pinning it down by the CFO is worth this amount and the line worker is worth this. You're looking at an overall employee investment, right? Not by position.
That's correct.
So you can say, it's not tainted based upon your level in the company. If you add And the HR could say, chief human resource officer could say, we need another 2,000.
Right.
You can sit there and tell them, by adding 2,000 employees based on the projections, this should be the return. And once the number's in, we can prove that that 2,000 employee addition has produced X, Y, and Z.
We can. We measure the aggregate, and then we can bifurcate that or segment it among business units. Anywhere where there's a P&L is where this can work. And because you're measuring change over time, you can isolate the overall impact of that incremental increase in the workforce and see whether it's adding as much value to the business as you argued for in terms of the investment in the first place.
So, Frank, where's the pushback? Why is – and there's got to be pushback or every company would be employing it right now. What do you see as that roadblock that is stopping you from getting in with every company and doing this?
It's a learning curve issue. It's a change management issue. There's a lot going on in the workforce analytics or HR metric space that's along the very traditional lines of turnover analysis, engagement scores. This is very new in the approach, so it just takes time. You need to find early adopters, people that like new ideas, that want to pilot them. And as we get more and more advocates, others will follow. In every pilot that we've done, the CHROs have walked out of it highly confident that that this has materially influenced their impact within the organizations.
And if you have the buy-in from the CFO,
right,
it's golden, correct? I mean, the CFO is going to be the one that's either going to say yay or nay. Besides the present board, what have you, but they're the ones that it impacts the numbers. They're hard numbers. They want to know. Once you get the CFO to buy in, it's a cakewalk.
Yes, in the sense that, and what's interesting is every CHRO that we've met with, the first thing they say is, I want to run this by the CFO, because if the CFO buys into it, then I know it's legitimate. And to every CFO that has looked at this, including two that are in Fortune 100 companies, they said the formulas are solid, the data solid, we can trust the outcome. The moment you get that, you're not arguing over the data anymore.
No.
What you're arguing about is what are the actions that we have to take to drive those numbers to a higher level. Complete change in dynamic in the relationship between HR, finance, and the CEO.
And the direct accountability. You know exactly what the word accountability comes. There's no pushback there.
It's interesting. We reviewed this with a prominent professor at one of the Fortune, at one of the Ivy League schools.
Penn State?
And his response was that in terms of the pushback that you talked about, Kenny, was his pushback was, I don't know, Frank, if HR is prepared to accept accountability. It blew me away. I see something like this as an opportunity to maximize HR's influence in the C-suite. And his observation was HR doesn't want to be held accountable.
We're with Frank DiBernardino, who is the author of Optimize Human Capital Investments, a must read. It's probably about 80 pages worth of reading, some indexes. It's a very good beach read for you beachgoers. Frank is the managing principal of Vienna Capital Advisors. www.viennahca.com. Frank, it was a pleasure having you on. I thank you for the opportunity.
Great to be here, Kenny. Thank you.